Cow Plunge.
Fourth Grade Challenge.
Diabetes Expo.
As a key sponsor of Mustangs Baseball and Chiefs Training Camp, Heartland is a number one fan for a healthy St. Joseph.
Presented by Heartland Health, Josh Looney with you, rocking the studio solo today as we return to Chiefs training camp. Not a lot has happened since we last chatted on Saturday prior to the Chiefs Family Fun Day practice. Players' day off happened on Sunday, is now Monday, which means the Arizona Cardinals are arriving in town, and tomorrow's practice will be the big one everyone's been waiting for, probably the most exciting practice of training camp. Cardinals, Chiefs, squaring up. It won't be a full takedown scrimmage, but there'll be plenty of practicing together, one-on-ones, nine-on-sevens, and we'll get to evaluate how the Chiefs look against someone else. And, of course, it all carries in to what happens at the end of this week. Can you believe it? All these Chiefs' lives throughout the offseason. It is game week in Kansas City. The Chiefs will be taking on a Cardinals team fresh off their first game. A tough call for the Cardinals coming off a short week. That's why they're here in St. Joe. They played last night in the Hall of Fame game, and they play again on Friday. They'll be off today, resting things up. Got in at the crack of dawn this morning after playing the New Orleans Saints last night in Canton, Ohio. As I said, there'll be a joint practice between the Chiefs and the Cardinals on Tuesday. Wednesday, the teams will go their separate ways. Thursday, it's back to Kansas City, and Friday, it is kickoff at Arrowhead. So the Cardinals have the advantage of having a game under their belts. Chiefs will not tackle, have not had any tackle drills before this Friday night's game, so that will be new for the Chiefs. However, they have been ratcheting it up in practice. A couple of notes from Saturday's Family Fun Day. Brady Quinn, phenomenal day, his best day in camp thus far. Hit Jeremy Horn in the back of an end zone during red zone work. He hit Josh Bellamy down the left sideline and even had Brandon Kinney in a deep ball as well down the right sideline that Kinney ultimately dropped. Brady Quinn, if we're looking for a backup quarterback to step up and take the reins, boy, he did a great job on Saturday. It's the first time that we've had a backup jump up and really differentiate themselves. Can it continue? We'll see. Does Stanzi have an answer for that? Obviously, what they do on Friday night will play a long way, but that's, if you want to take away something from Family Fun Day, Brady Quinn, he looked like the best quarterback in camp. Both Castle and Ricky Stanzi had interceptions on Family Fun Day. It was one of the few Castle mistakes we've seen of camp. Castle's had a very good camp thus far, protecting the football. Was picked off on the very first play of 7-on-7 when he went for Kevin Boss. Kendrick Lewis stepped up and picked off that pass. And Castle, you know, he recovered from there. He had a fine day, but Brady Quinn stood out as the guy in practice on Saturday's Family Fun Day. We also had Ryan Lilja taking a little rep at center. Some injury updates we'll get to with Romeo Crennel, as well as Ryan Lilja playing center. What does that mean for the Chiefs? It means probably what you think it means. It's one of those deals where something happens to Rodney Hudson, maybe it's an in-game replacement. Let's get straight to the injuries. It's been an off week, or an off weekend, per se. The Chiefs were off on Sunday, had some time to heal up and rest up. Romeo Crennel addressed the media earlier today, talked about the guys that are in, the guys that are out, and where the Chiefs are at, including Brandon Flowers and his injured foot.
I think Flowers will try to practice. Now, he tried Saturday on the turf, but it was still sore. And it might have been different if we had been on the grass, but it was still sore on the turf. So I think he'll try today to see how it feels. And if it feels good, I think that he'll go because he wants to go.
Big reps expected this week for Jamal Charles, Brandon Flowers, the ACL crew, Moyaki, Barry. It's a big week for them. They're going to get a lot of work in that practice against the Cardinals. They're going to get a lot of work in the upcoming game. Romeo Crennel hasn't exactly said how long the starters will play, but we know we're going to see the ACL crew in Arrowhead on Friday. If you remember the last year, that wasn't exactly the case. Most of the Chiefs starters rested in that first game coming off the NFL lockout. Todd Haley's outside-the-box approach to resting players early in camp, they kind of flipped things and had the starters play late into the game against Green Bay in the preseason finale and had them sit out against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I believe it was, last year in the preseason opener. Romeo Crennel's going to go at it and go at it hard on Friday night, and he's going to have those guys in uniform against the Arizona Cardinals. So that's always good when the Chiefs are going to be opening up in front of the home crowd. Romeo Crennel talked about giving reps to those players earlier today, and here's his plan going forward for the reps that these guys will see.
Our other guys, our knees, our major surgeries, who've been, you know, we've been managing during the course of training camp. We will continue to manage those guys as well, but I think it's important for them to get reps in the game to begin to find out, you know, where they are, how they feel, and how those injuries are recovering for them. So we'll give them some time and see how it goes.
Inside Family Fun Day. Now you get a look at what you might have missed if you were out, missed Saturday's practice. The Chiefs were out there on the field doing some hitting, doing some popping. Full pads. Look at the heat rise from that turf right there. It was a hot day, another hot one, and Romeo Crennel wrapped up the tempo. Great crowd at Family Fun Day, and the Chiefs didn't disappoint. As I said, Brady Quinn had a great afternoon. The defense with two interceptions, one off Stanzi, one off of Castle. They entertained as well as they continue to beat the Heat. This team, although they haven't taken players down, they definitely appear that they're getting ready for a game. They seem a lot better as far as game shape would go than they did last season. Without working with the tempo of full contact, they're still working up tempo. It's kind of a strange balance, and I guess you kind of have to be here to see it. And there's some contact going on. I mean, you're seeing this with Dontari Poe and John Asamoah. This is the sight to sound every day. I mean, these guys are working hard at the line of scrimmage. Just because they're not tackling guys doesn't mean there isn't contact. They're looking at some pass pro, Peyton Hillis and Javon Belcher. You're getting that on special teams as well. Ryan Succop had a very good day on Family Fun Day. Knocked one from 53 and another from 46 yards. And you're even seeing some bump and run coverage with the defensive backs working with the wide receiver. So just because the Chiefs haven't been tackling doesn't mean they haven't ratcheted up the tempo. We talked to Eric Winston about that and more, and he'll tell you, look, we're not hitting, but they don't need to hit. Eric Winston very opinionated on what exactly training camp is, and he gives those opinions here before practice on Saturday.
For you, how monotonous is this stuff? Are you just ready to play?
Well, it's tough. You know, I think you're always ready to play. You always want to get to the games. I mean, this is why we kill ourselves every day out here to so we can be in the game. And, you know, believe me, we're all rusty coming into this thing. We all need some of the contact, need some of this stuff. I love the way that the camp's set up now. I think it's very fair for the players, and I think it's probably the best way to go for the players. But at the same time, you know, I think we all need that practice. And let's face it, when you're a professional, when you step on the field, you got to get better. And I think there's guys around the league getting better right now. And I think, you know, you just can't kind of lollygag through these practices and expect to turn it on Friday.
Is it enough, though, for you guys right now? Because you kind of, with the OTAs and whatnot, kind of outspoken with all that and the unnecessary practice time maybe. Is it enough for you guys to get ready for the season now?
Oh, I think it's plenty. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, listen, are we 100% ready for the first preseason game? Probably not. But, you know, everybody's looking at the same time. But I guarantee you, when you get to that second and third preseason game, everything's in. You've run it multiple times already, and you're repping it. And then that at that point, I think by that third preseason game, you're treating it like a real game, and you're ready to go. So, you know, I think the schedule's good. I think the schedule is like I said before. I think it's fair to the players. But I also think it's the correct way to go about it. I think, you know, whether you – you know, however you look at it, I think there's always going to be overzealousness in the coaching world, and everyone's going to look to try to get an up. You know, I just look at it from a kind of from an economic point of view, where you got the kind of law of returns. You know, you're going to have some bad returns, I think, if you start running guys in the ground. And I think this way now, you're going to have you have guys that I think it's fair, and I think you're going to have guys that are fresh and ready to go. I think you look back, we didn't have the OTAs and the lockout. We didn't have anything. I think football was never better last year. So these guys are professionals. I think it's time to give the professionals around the league a lot of credit. I think they're getting ready to play, and I think they'll be ready to play.
Is there enough contact in training camp now to get you guys ready for that you know what's going to take place in a couple of weeks?
Come watch us practice for 2.5 hours and ask me that question afterwards. You know, there's plenty of contact. You know, there's, yeah, I laugh at that. You know, to think somehow you got to hit twice a day to have your bodies ready for contact. It's, you know, to me, it's laughable from that standpoint. We hit plenty. There's plenty of contact. There will be plenty of contact to be had over the next month going into it. I think all these guys are going to be ready to play, and I think it's on us now to understand the playbook, to be in the more than that, just to be able to go out and execute as we go forward.
Now we go into our live chat room here. A little bit of talk of Ryan Succop. Could he hit a 63-yarder? I answered maybe with a little bit of wind. He didn't have anyone at his back. In fact, it might have been in his face a little bit. Slight breeze, nothing to take the trajectory off the football too much, but he should be noted on Saturday he had a 53-yarder. What I didn't tell you was that 53-yarder hits the crossbar and then goes in. So on Saturday, his max looked to be about 53 yards. I think Ryan can probably expand upon 53 if the weather conditions are appropriate. At 63, we're talking sea bass range now, and not many guys can kick it 63 yards. But Succop has had a good start to camp, fresh off that big contract he got. And really, it's nice to be in a training camp where your kicking game is set. Thomas Gafford is your snapper. Dustin Colquitt is one of the better punters in the league. And Ryan Succop hit 20-some-odd field goals in a row last year for the Chiefs. And then you've got a kid in Matt Szymanski, which a lot of people ask, why even have another kicker in camp? Well, it's interesting with Szymanski. He punts and he kicks. It's rest for both Colquitt and Succop. You know, I think Matt knows that there's not much chance that he beats out those guys. Of course, you never know in the NFL. It's about getting on tape. If a guy pulls a hammy, if there's an injury, he's a guy who can do both things. So he's getting a long look. And so for a guy like Szymanski, just to be in a camp provides great opportunities for his career, and maybe not even just in Kansas City, but beyond. And so Szymanski kind of giving rest here in camp, but the Chiefs kicking game completely set as it is right now. Dustin Colquitt, Ryan Succop, and, of course, Thomas Gafford. A lot of people asking about Alex Tanny. You know, I can't give you a whole lot on Tanny thus far. Guy hasn't been getting a lot of reps in camp, and I think that's a product of the backup quarterback battle that is going on between Stanzi and Quinn. We're not seeing a camp where, obviously, Matt Castle is getting starters reps. He's going to work, and they're going to get him ready for the year. But we're not seeing a camp where the number two guy gets 40 reps, the number three guy gets 10, the other guy gets 10. If there's 40 reps to be had, you're seeing Stanzi take 20, and you're seeing Quinn takes 20. I don't think Alex Tanny even got a snap during the scrimmage on Saturday, the family fun day. I do think we will see him in the preseason game this year. You never know. One injury could change things. And so right now, Tanny's doing the best he can in individual drills every day and 7-on-7 work he'll get rep. And Tanny looks about like you would expect. He's a rookie free agent. He came in late. He's still learning this playbook. The Chiefs didn't sign him until early June. There's probably a lot to like about this guy, a lot of intrigue, a lot of fan intrigue. But as far as reports of what he's done at camp thus far and team settings, Tanny hasn't had many snaps with the third-string offense or the second-team offense or the first-team offense. So it's a little bit hard to say for you Alex Tanny fans out there. I do think as camp goes on, he will start to get some reps, and especially in those games. And, of course, an injury to any of the three quarterbacks definitely changes things. As we saw just last night, Kevin Cobb going out, a big opportunity coming up Friday night for John Skelton in that quarterback battle that Arizona is going on. We do know there's not a quarterback battle for the starting job. Matt Castle has had a very good start to camp, had the pick against the defense going for Kevin Boss on Saturday. Maybe his really only mistake throw of camp. Tried to squeeze in about a 15-yard out to Boss, held a little too long, and Lewis was able to jump the route. Prior to that, Castle's only interception was one into the flats where Javier Arenas made a leaping, diving interception, one of the better defensive plays of camp. Castle's protected the football well. He's taken the leadership role, and really through 1 week and a half of camp, it's about where you'd want to see the Chiefs starting quarterback, especially going into a big fourth season as a team starter. Eric Winston also touched on Matt Castle, what he likes about this quarterback and how he's done in camp thus far.
What do you like out of Matt Castle?
You know, a lot. You know, he's been impressive. To me, the biggest thing is you know, how many times he's probably had to switch playbooks over the last 3 years. I think a lot of that stuff can get jumbled in your head. I know it for me, you know, being at a spot for 6 years and then coming here, some of the terminology sometimes means different things and you can get jumbled. For him, it seems like he's been in this playbook for years now. He's barking out audibles. He never seems to be making mistakes. To me, that's been the most impressive thing. The quarterback position is so difficult from a mental standpoint and from an execution standpoint, everything. And when you combine those on a practice field against a great defense, and for to see him executing the way he is, to see him out there making the throws, making the checks, even knowing the fronts, making the run audibles to other different runs that are better. It's just, it's been impressive watching him work the offense.
All right, one more, Eric Winston ushers in a new era of football for the Chiefs at right tackle. We were reminded, though, this weekend of the glory days of Chiefs football when it comes to offensive tackles, offensive guards, centers. I mean, let's think left to right. Think of the days, Pro Football Hall of Famer Willie Rofe, just inducted over the weekend. He was your left tackle. You have Brian Waters, who's probably a future Hall of Famer, at left guard. You keep going across the line. Casey Wigman, an Iron Man. Will Shields, who maybe next year we'll be talking about his Hall of Fame induction at right guard. And then at right tackle, John Tate. That five for the Chiefs in the early 2000s, that starting five, put them against any starting five in the history of the National Football League. And you can make an argument. They're right up there. You list the top three offensive line groups in the history of NFL football, and the Chiefs, with that starting five, ranked right up there. Probably the best of all those guys is going to end up being Willie Rofe. If you read our camp notebook on Saturday and over the weekend, Dustin Colquitt told a funny story about Willie Rofe and how Dustin Colquitt went on his first road trip as a rookie with the Chiefs in 2005. Halftime comes in, and Colquitt's, for whatever reason, didn't hang his suit up in his locker. He just folded it over the back of his chair. Willie Rofe comes in and sits in Colquitt's chair at halftime. Big sweaty man. Colquitt's suit was ruined. He had to go with mesh shorts the rest of the trip. And, of course, he thought back and talked about how Willie Rofe was just a man among boys, even at the NFL level. Derek Johnson gave his thoughts on Willie, from the man who looked like he couldn't walk between plays to then he'd get out there on the edge and absolutely unstoppable with Priest Holmes and Larry Johnson running behind Willie Rofe. An amazing athlete, an amazing player for the Chiefs. A guy's left his legacy. It's crazy that he's only been gone 7 years and there's only two players on this 90-man roster that played with Rofe, and they're both rookies, Colquitt and Derek Johnson. It shows you both the youth and the turnover that the Chiefs have gone over the last few years. But no one forgets the impact Willie Rofe made. Comes into the Chiefs really after New Orleans had given up on him off a knee injury. All it cost was a fourth-round pick. You can argue one of the greatest trades in franchise history. Willie Rofe, congratulations, a 2012 Hall of Fame inductee.
I started playing football at a young age, playing in the yard and around the neighborhood. And I led to organized football for the East Side Panthers at age 10 with my brother, who was 8. Our coach, L.G. Robinson, was a neighborhood coach and was a neighborhood mailman. So he had to get off work and then come take us to practice every day and make sure we showed up. Football was the biggest sport in Pine Bluff, and it was very, very competitive back then. At Pine Bluff High School, we had some real good football teams, and we got beat my senior year by Fort Smith Northside in the semifinals. And I'd like to thank my high school football coach, Marion Glover, as well as my high school basketball coach, Joe Ball, who's here with us tonight. Thank you, coach, for being here. Interestingly enough, I'm the second to join the Hall of Fame from my high school, following in the footsteps of the great Don Hutson, who played for the University of Alabama and for the Green Bay Packers in the 30s and the 40s. Some other outstanding athletes that played at my high school were Eric Mitchell, Basir Shabazz, Danny and Mark Bradley, Tracy Caldwell, Trey Reed, Elshon Richmond, Keith Kemp, Monty Coleman, Michael James, and current baseball player Torrey Hunter, and basketball Arkansas legend U.S. Reed. We have a great tradition there. The only school that offered me a scholarship initially was Louisiana Tech, and it was a blessing. I went there and learned from a great coaching staff that included head coach Joe Raymond Peace, my line coach, Petey Pirro, Joe Taylor, Jerry Baldwin, Steve Ensminger, Joe Ferguson, and Pat Tilley. From them, I got the individual guidance and direction to help me develop my skills at a program that was just going Division I. We were and still are our family, and I grew up a lot in Ruston. As a result of the hard work at Louisiana Tech, the New Orleans Saints, Tom Benson and general manager Jim Finks and head coach Jim Moore drafted me in the first round. I was blessed to have 9 wonderful years with the Saints organization, especially winning our first playoff game in the 2000 season. I will forever be thankful for the Saints for drafting me. The Kansas City Chiefs organization gave me another chance to play football after suffering a serious knee injury. They were the only team that would really give me another chance to play. And I want to thank the Hunt family for bringing me to Kansas City, especially Lamar Hunt and Carl Peterson. I played on one of the best offensive lines in the league while I was in Kansas City, and we set the tone for the team every week. And I wouldn't have gotten the most out of my career if it wasn't for my agent. I had my whole career, Lamont Smith and Peter Safer. Thank you, guys.
Congrats once again to Willie Rowe. I want to spend the final few minutes here of Training Camp Live addressing some of the topics going on in our live chat room. Of course, those of you that watch the archive version, 2 to 2:30 p.m. is when we're live, and you can interact here on this show and really drive the topic of conversation from time to time. Our man Jeffrey Travis, with an interesting take here, Tony G will crush Barry was the comment, and I responded, interesting take. And Jeff, as you might get crushed from some Chiefs fans, but I think behind that comment, whether you meant it or not, whether you're a Tony G fan, whether you're not an Eric Berry fan, or whether you just love Tony G, I think the underlying part of that comment is there is a history there of Eric Berry struggling to cover tight ends. If you remember early in his career, Antonio Gates in Eric Berry's rookie debut handled the rookie. I think that Berry did improve going against tight ends as his rookie year went on. But if you want to find a chink in this kid's armor, I don't know if there is one other than man-to-man and tight ends. He's getting a lot of good work here. You see him manning up on Tony Moyaki there. He's got 2 good tight ends he can work on game in, game out. I don't think Tony Gonzalez is going to come in and school Eric Berry. I think it's going to be a great competition. You've got a Hall of Famer at the end of his career versus one of the better players at his position in the league, a Pro Bowl as a rookie, but also coming off a season where he missed completely to injury. One thing about Eric Berry, he has not shown any rust in camp. There he is manning up on the hottest receiver in camp, John Baldwin. Berry is also a little bit interesting. In sub-package work, the Chiefs are using him as a little more of that joker role where he's playing a little more inside the box. If Abram Elam can come along and make Berry position flexible, scary thing for this defense. But Jeff Travis, an interesting take there on Tony Gonzalez. I say I would disagree with you, but I wouldn't say that it's a topic not worth having. Eric Berry, that's the one thing of his game, if we took from his rookie year, that he needs to improve upon is man-to-man coverage against the tight end. And let's face it, that's the kind of hybrid-type player this league really looks for, because that's the mismatch with the Gronkowskis, Aaron Hernandez, Jimmy Graham. Look what teams are doing with these tight ends, especially if you have 2 of them, let alone 1, and Antonio Gates and Tony Gonzalez. It's tough to find a safety who is fast enough and quick enough to cover a defensive back, a tight end in space. And it's tough to find a corner who can go head-to-head with it. There's a mismatch right there. Kevin Boss with a great catch on outside linebacker Justin Houston. That shows you right there what mismatches can do. So, Jeffrey, I actually think that's a pretty decent take there in the chat room, whether you meant it to be decent or not. Another question from one of our fans here asking about Tyson Jackson and Glenn Dorsey. As I go here, I credit the name. It looks like we've had a ton of comments since I last saw that. Here we go. Mystic Mariner from Alaska talks about Tony G. Sorry I'm not crediting you, but the Dorsey and Jackson update. Here's my update on Glenn Dorsey. If I wanted to give an MVP to Saturday's Family Fun Day, I guess I put him in 3rd place. Number 1, I'm giving to Brady Quinn. Number 2, Cameron Sheffield was all over the field, and that's good news for Chiefs fans as they try and build depth behind Justin Houston and Tom Bahali. But 3rd would go to Glenn Dorsey. It was a guy who was collapsing the pocket out of base sets. And really seem to be causing some havoc for the offensive linemen. Glenn Dorsey had a very good day. We don't see him do a whole lot of penetration in the pass game. His big deal is being a run key. But he was there. He was collapsing the pocket in addition to stopping the run on Saturday. I really like what I saw out of Glenn Dorsey. As far as Tyson Jackson goes, I've seen some flashes this camp. I've also seen Eric Winston win some battles as well. Tyson Jackson is going to get better going against Eric Winston every day. There's been some losses for Jackson in camp, and there's been some wins. I think really with both of those guys and the Chiefs scheme, it's let's wait until the games start and see how the Chiefs run defense is, because that's how ultimately you're going to judge Jackson, Dorsey, and even Dontari Poe if he's a starter, or Anthony Toribio if he ends up being the starter at nose tackle and base. It's can they keep players off of Derek Johnson? The Chiefs run defense has some room to improve, I think. But at the same time, Derek Johnson also had a career year last year, made his first Pro Bowl, set a franchise single season tackle record. So there was some pretty good play from the players in front of him. And I haven't seen any step back against the run by either Jackson or Dorsey in camp. But you're right, it's something that's not getting talked about a lot here in camp, how Jackson and Dorsey are doing. When they talk about a defensive line, they're looking at the rise of Anthony Toribio, who's been a surprise in camp thus far. Can he continue it? We'll have to wait and see in the games. He's been very good. They get some footage of Jackson. I think he was working against Tony Hugo there, who has since retired. But Jackson getting work every day against Eric Winston, that's some good work for him as well. Of course, we have plenty of talks here when we talk about Dwayne Bowe. And with Dwayne Bowe, is he here? No, he's still not here. What does it mean for Dwayne Bowe? Well, it doesn't mean a whole lot. He's not going to lose any money holding out of training camp. There really isn't a deadline approaching that he has to sign by. Really, the key is if he isn't signed by before the first game, he'll start losing money. So that's really all it is with Dwayne Bowe. Been very quiet here still. The player is not reported to camp, and we've talked about it at length on this show. I'm less concerned about the holdout contract-wise. The thing that concerns me is it's not even his conditioning level and strength. I think Bowe is past those days. I think he's a more mature player. To me, it's how fast can he get into Brian Daboll's offense. The basics of this offense are now installed. It's a new offense. They've been doing it all training camp long, all off-season long. It is new. And Dwayne Bowe has not had a single rep with Brian Daboll. Steve Breston was talked about it a little bit earlier in camp, said if Bowe can get into camp, that he thinks he can learn it quickly. I think that's the thing that remains to be seen. I don't think there's any hard feelings, though, that I get of that he's moving on from Dwayne Bowe. In fact, even if he plays under the franchise tag, I don't think it means necessarily his career in Kansas City is going to be up after this year. There's too many things that can happen. A lot of people already moving on towards John Baldwin. I don't think the organization is moving on from Dwayne Bowe towards John Baldwin. It'd be great if Baldwin continues what he's shown in camp. I'm going to pump the brakes a little bit on John Baldwin, though. He's been phenomenal in camp. Let's see what he does in the game, though. He's done great in practice, and he's carried it from non-padded practices to padded practices. But now let's see what he can do against an opponent he doesn't know much about. From what I've seen, Jonathan Baldwin's ready to take that next step. John Baldwin is a guy who I think will succeed this season. But let's see it. Let's face it, he's in proving ground. He had 21 catches last year as a rookie. He's only caught 8 passes for Matt Cassel. So before anyone's moving forward with John Baldwin, it's very encouraging what he's shown, but let's see it. So I pumped the brakes a little bit on all the Baldwin talk. I know it's an exciting time. He's done nothing but impress. Don't get me wrong. He's performed better than you would want to see him perform if you're looking for a guy who's going to take a second step in year two. But let's pump the brakes and see how he does against competition. And I'll start tomorrow at training camp when Baldwin gets to go one-on-one with some Arizona corners, and he'll carry that into Friday's game. And let's see how he looks in that game. I think that's the next step for John Baldwin, and it's going to be exciting to watch this player's evolution as he grows. And I think he needs to take that next step. As far as camp goes, John Baldwin's been great. And really, is everything you want to see from him, we have seen thus far. That about wraps us up at Training Camp Live. Tomorrow, Mitch Holthus will be back on the show joining us as we prepare you for the joint practice with the Arizona Cardinals. The Chiefs back on the practice field today on Monday here in just about an hour. And we'll bring you everything that happened at practice today and get you ready for that Chiefs-Cardinals game on Friday night. We'll see you tomorrow, 2 p.m. to 2:30 right here on KCChiefs.com for Chiefs Training Camp Live, presented by Heartland Health.
Cow Plunge.
Fourth Grade Challenge.
Diabetes Expo.
As a key sponsor of Mustangs Baseball and Chiefs Training Camp, Heartland is the number one fan for a healthy St. Joseph.